into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Now you're very welcome along. Autumn Nations Cup is reaching its magnificent conclusion. England will play France on Sunday. Ireland play Scotland in the third place playoff at the weekend as well. Croke Park 2010, the last time the Scots won in Dublin. Before that, it's Lansdowne Road 1998. They may well fancy their chances this weekend. Obviously, they gave Ireland a bit of a run earlier this year. And things haven't improved massively from an Irish point of view. Yesterday, Ireland 23, Georgia 10. First half very acceptable, second half was a 3-3 draw. Not good enough was what Andy Farrell said. We have Keith Wood and Brian O'Driscoll with us. Brian, have you managed to come down from this game yet?
It's quite the spectacle, all right. Listen, it was, you know, there was some positivity to be had in the first half, there's no doubt. Created lots of chances, didn't take as many as they would have liked to, what was it, 20 points to 7, I think. A more comfortable and a better reflection of the score might have been 27 points to 7. And I think, you know, that potential Stuart McCloskey try that was ruled out in the end, that could have kind of given them another spring of confidence going in at halftime. It felt as though it worked in reverse. Once it was denied, it kind of felt as though it went seriously downhill thereafter. And yeah, a real lackluster performance, unfortunately. Not what we were hoping for. I think we all saw this as a great opportunity to build confidence, build an understanding as to how we were, you know, we were going to go about shaping our game plan, and nothing really came of that in the second half. I think that's the most disappointing thing from the public's perspective, but also from the players and coaching staff perspective, that it's a real missed opportunity.
What do you make of it, Keith?
Pretty depressing viewing, dire viewing, actually. And it just, all the energy that was, there was a bit of energy at the start, as Brian said, there was none in the second half, absolutely none. And the lack of urgency, the lack of quality, even the lack of thinking in the second half made it very, very hard to watch. And, you know, look, Georgia are honest, physical, and we should have picked them apart and didn't. And I know we had a lot of guys injured and there were a lot of changes to the team, but for me the overall sense was that the team was just incredibly flat, like lackluster in terms of energy. And I don't know whether that's partly to do with this competition, which I mean, as you said, you kind of piss-taking at the start for what it was. You know, have you come down from the highs from it? But like, it's the closest thing to a training session, as you can see, these matches are. They're like friendlies. Test rugby are not friendlies. And I know those elements that was tough, and the players would say that parts of it were very tough. But you can't seem to get away from the fact that they don't really matter that much.
Maybe especially disappointing, Keith, because post-Twickenham, you would have thought this team wanted to put down something of a marker to themselves, if nothing else.
I do, I think so, you know, and yeah, there are certain good things and good tip-ons and good lines and a couple of nice passes, a great running line from Burns to score. The passes from Stockdale, actually, I thought both of them were forward. And I'd like to set a challenge to the mathematicians that are out there that listen to Off the Ball. Could you figure out the equation for me for what pace the player has to be running at for the ball to have enough momentum to go forward? Because that is what it is about. But if you're jogging and you pass the ball and it goes forward, that's forward. You know. He wasn't sprinting at full tilt. Mm. So the big wide passes, but even the try that was scored, I thought was a forward pass. So for me, it was James Ryan one. I thought he was certain that he got the ball down. And that could have put a bit of a change on it. But like, they trudged off at halftime. You know, it was flat.
Mm. Relative velocity, Keith. You know, World Rugby did a video on this a few years ago for people to understand that you know with momentum, a huge number of passes are actually carry forward. And I agree with you on the first try. I think that one was probably forward, but the second one for me, yes, it does travel probably a meter forward, but the momentum and the speed at which Stockdale is carrying the ball. And I can't agree with Reynal saying that it immediately came out and went forward from his hands. It did not. At worst, it was lateral, and the momentum carried it forward. And I thought that was a really, really poor decision between TMO and referee.
Yeah, I didn't think he was going quick enough, actually. And I do know that if you're going fast enough and you pass the ball will go forward. It has to go forward from where you start from. But for me, I didn't think he was going quick enough for that to be the case, and it carried too far forward. So that's why I'm asking for the actual maths. I'm not saying the philosophy. I agree with the philosophy, but I'd like to know how quick they'd have to be going for it to happen. But for me, it was, you know, they were wide passes. They were good passes. If they went back a little bit, they would have been very good passes and try scoring passes. But that was the only way we were getting to any level of width, you know. And it's, for me, that's just a little bit frustrating. There was a lot of still one out carries or players carrying it in. That, you know, I just think we need to show more when we weren't under pressure. And Georgia don't have a hard press defence, so they weren't putting a lot of the handling under pressure. They would rush up, not fully disciplined, but. But we weren't under pressure, and we still didn't try and do an awful lot with the ball.
Brian, to what extent is all this up to scrutiny now on Andy Farrell?
Yeah, it does. Like, I think we have to remember too, he's technically a year into the job now at this stage. We did say that he would need to be given the whole year. It's been very disjointed, and so it's probably unfair. He's missed out on a summer tour as well to bed down more of his policies and his philosophies. Unfortunately, we haven't seen that evolution like we would have anticipated during this November tournament. So it does put added pressure on a performance and then less so a result. I think everyone's crying out for a good performance and an 80-minute performance and to get a better sense as to, you know, what we can expect or the level we can expect to attain to get to. That's at the moment, it just doesn't feel, it feels very disjointed, doesn't really have any clarity as to what specifically we're trying to achieve. I think, you know, to Keith's point there, we had huge access to play wide because of the lack of the press from Georgia to get to space, and we didn't take it on. We still got into a little bit of that arm wrestle in midfield against a very, very physical team. And I felt we looked a little bit one-dimensional. And then the quality of passing when we were trying to get into the wider channels, creating three-on-twos. Like, there was a couple of incidents where there was a three-on-two. Hugo Keenan caught a ball, a really good pass from Chris Farrell into his chest, takes a second for it to come off his chest. He throws it to Stockdale into his chest as well. And Keith Earls is gone down the wing if both of those passes are caught out in front with, you know, hands up. And I think you can tell a lot about the confidence of individuals on how they catch the ball. If they're catching it in their chest, there's no confidence. If they're catching it with their hands down like that, it's no confidence as well. You got to have your hands up as a target, because that's how you shift the ball quickly across your body. And those for me are real telltale signs that it's, you know, certain players are lacking confidence in understanding exactly what they're trying to do to execute the play properly. Mm. And the best teams in the world are capable of scoring, you know, three on twos and four on twos. And there was a number of opportunities at the weekend that we let pass us by because of the accuracy of our passing. And that was one of the things, another one of those things under Joe Schmidt, and we'll never be able to get away from the Joe Schmidt era. And in some ways that's a good thing, because he was always so focused on being a good passing team. And I think that's regressed a little bit. I'm sure we'll come on to it. I think the ruck has really regressed as well. We touched on it last week. And I know that would have been a focal point for them, but I thought they were, you know, second best a lot of the time, and their accuracy there is really hurting them.
That was going to be my next question, that you had mentioned the ruck last week. So had it improved this week? Not really, then, is the answer.
Not so much. Right. Not so much, unfortunately. And it's, you know, I think we had to commit less numbers into the ruck. But even still, I feel there's something in the body fight of the players. I thought there was a concession by players. Yes, we're playing a very hard physical team, and gosh, I'm sure there were sore bodies, you know, on this morning waking up. But the willingness to go to ground and not fight and look for an extra yard or fight to get to that soft shoulder, give easier targets. There was a few, very few guys that you could honestly say accelerated 100% into the tackle. I thought Chris Farrell on reflection tried his heart out, and it didn't fall for him. He didn't get that many opportunities. He didn't do a whole lot wrong, but at least when he carries with intent. I think some guys are going in almost accepting the physical confrontation, and the knock-on effect is that's going to make your ruck ball much more difficult because you're going to lose the collision. We've got to get more collision winners. Even in those 50-50s, when it's not going your way, you've got to find a way to fight to a soft shoulder, to fight for a second on the ground, to get the long body, to give an access point for your two clearers to come in and blow the opposition away, and then quick ruck ball shift it again. It just felt all of it stodgy and a bit slow and a bit prescribed.
Keith, Andy Farrell was appointed at the height of the Joe Schmidt regime. He was a continuity appointment. Everybody under that umbrella at the time looked brilliant, and he had, the extra motivational presence, and this was talked about as a very sensible appointment. I don't know that they even talked to anyone else. It was just a fait accompli when it was announced that Joe was moving on. Are you starting to worry about this now? I mean, this is not good.
No, there's a couple of things in that. For one, I think you should always interview people for jobs. I always think it's a little bit difficult when you name it very early. When Joe announced he was going pretty early, I think it makes it difficult when you know there's a successor already in place. My God, your last year has to be great because you're going to take over from it. I think some of the issues Brian was talking about, this, I was trying to interject there in the middle of it, but... I couldn't get a gap, Brian. You talk an awful lot of words there. When Joe, the last year of Joe Schmidt, some of that attention to detail was unraveling a little bit, and it was partly unraveling because the bigger teams were targeting us in the manner in which we were playing, and were looking for chinks in that style of play that Joe had. And there was a very high attention to detail, and it was incredibly focused, and it was also incredibly structured. And it had been incredibly structured for a good few years. So the query that I had for this, and I'd like Brian to answer it because I think you have more experience, well, obviously, since you played under Joe, is that when you have a new coach and he doesn't have that view, does it take a long period of time for players? They may wish to have a lighter touch, but they've been used to being told where to go and what to do. And for me, I'm looking at the team and there seems to be a distinct sense of uncertainty. And you know that if you're not certain about something, that's the time when you might catch the ball to your chest, or that's the time where you may kind of not quite throw yourself into the ruck or whatever. And at some times when that happens, you just want for it to be simple, to know your job, do your job very well. I feel when I'm looking at it, when I see the team being a bit flat, I feel as if they're thinking their way through things. Well, there's no time and space in international rugby to think your way through it. There's very few players have that time on the ball. And we look as if we're a little bit hesitant with it. I'm just wondering, Brian, whether you think that some of the players that have been conditioned, conditioned to play the way Joe wanted, that now that that condition is gone, are they struggling with the freedom?
Maybe so. I think you have to remember as well that it was a real strength of Joe in the early years, playing four or five phases power plays when it was new to the game, where not many other teams were doing it, until teams discovered in England, probably the first, to leave us to the first three or four rucks don't contest until you see that, punch play happening. And then Ireland will kind of run out of ideas if they don't make that line break after the fourth or fifth contact. So it's hard to know. I've been brutally honest, Keith. I'm not sure should they have the ability to learn conditioning, a different type of conditioning quite quickly as professionals? Yes, they should. Are they doing things slightly different than the national team at their provinces? Yes, all four of them are. So I do feel as though, I don't think it's an excuse that you can go, oh, we were doing this for 6 or 7 years and we were so programmed to do it. It's very hard to take new messaging. I think that's, possibly a bit of a cop out. I think you have to be able to listen and, take on new information and look at incorporating it relatively quickly at the highest level. It's pretty unforgiving. International rugby, and if you're not able to take information on, tends to mean that you're not going to be there for the long haul. So I don't know. It's a really strange situation. I just feel as though when it comes to the ruck that they've taken their eye off the ball a little bit. I think they've, they're trying to focus on evolving the phase, the multi-phase, which, we see more of. Obviously now there's less of a focus. Yes, win your set piece, but talking about multi-phase and creating, slow ruck ball into fast ruck ball and how you can get your mismatches and so on. I think there's been a real focus of that heads-up rugby, but they've taken their eye off winning those rucks, and as a result, you don't get the ball in phase five if you don't win ruck four. So, it's a lesson in that I think you've got to make sure that you have those non-negotiables sorted every single test match, because it's a battleground test rugby, against any side in the world, be it England, be it Georgia. They are going to contest. If they feel you're vulnerable there, they're going to go even harder.
So in a sense, we're going to have to get back to basics. If the set piece isn't working, and it's patently not, the passing has slipped, the breakdown's not working, the heartbeat of the game, all of that stuff, all the boring basics that Joe Schmidt in his pomp had this side very, very good at, they have all dramatically slipped. And over here, meanwhile, the multi-phase game plan, strategy, whatever phrase you want to use, hasn't really blossomed at all. So what are we left with? Not much.
Well, I think they've slipped, but I also think some of the players have got older. Some of the players have retired. We're not dealing with exactly the same group of people that have that we are used to, that did very well, especially in 2018. But I do think there's nothing wrong with actually going back to brass tacks and making certain that you have the ball for a period of time. Now, we had the ball for a huge amount of time against England and we didn't do anything with it. We were never exposed at any stage with the ball until such time as we kicked it away, and then England kind of took their chances when they had to. But I don't know. I think I'd rather see that level of attention to detail. And for me, it's whether those things happen. Like, we've had this conversation often, Joe. Which one comes first? Is it that attitude that for some reason, it isn't that they're not up for the game, but they're not at a million miles an hour for whatever reason? Is that first? And if that isn't right, then the mistakes happen afterwards. Or do the mistakes lead to a dropping of that level of attention? That's where we get it. So it's just, look, we're frustrated, but there's parts of this that I feel we're kind of over-egging it too. I mean, but because it's very hard to get overly excited about Georgia without, and that sounds dreadfully dismissive of them, and but it's very hard to get overly excited for this tournament as well. And we know that a far more important tournament is the one that will happen immediately after Christmas. And we know that the Heineken Cup will be incredibly important in a couple of weeks' time. And we want to see an awful lot more from this very fractured season. But, like, I've looked at all the rugby. It's amazing, actually, because you're at home. I've been watching rugby day and night when it's been on. Very little of the rugby is exciting, by the way. Everything has become a kick fest, and it's as if everybody's taken the opportunity to spend more time off the training field looking at what can be done to stop other teams, and it's not exciting, it's not entertaining, by the way.
But Keith, I think where I'm frustrated in the last couple of weeks, and particularly at the weekend, there was space to be had. Particularly where there wasn't that hard press, and when they found tight five getting lost after phase of four or five, we just the McCluskey no try was actually brilliantly manufactured. They went to the width, You know, they played to a pod out the back and two really good quality passes. Okay, Stockdale's was ruled to have gone forward, but his pass that he received from Burns, and then, you know, he threw a big 15-meter, and that sort of width had them in all sorts of trouble, and I couldn't understand why we didn't see more of it. The other thing that is frustrating me about the team, and I've seen it over the last couple of weeks a lot, is they've a bit of an obsession with getting to kind of 10 meters from the touchline, then going back to, you know, the three-man pod, hitting the middle guy, sometimes a tip on, got to be lucky to not under-resource that ruck, but also then coming back to sweeping down the blind side where the defense has just stood up and are ready to make another hit. The whole thing about playing rugby at any level is you have to exhaust the defense, and you don't exhaust them by just making tackles. They have to make tackles and move to a different space. And that's where you get your mismatches. You've got to work them around the corner. And I think Ireland are playing into the opposition's hands at times by zigzagging at times into spaces where guys are going, oh, they're coming back down my channel again, and throw a shot in. I think that's the frustration, because there's no joy to be had down those spaces. Work to the open side. And if they overfold, then you can get your sweeps. But you've got to make them work in the first place. And I don't think Ireland are doing that at the moment.
Did we not kick too much yesterday? And when we get into the 22, I think a Grober is a very good option. But you wanted to stay into play. You don't want it to go into touch.
I thought the kicking in our 22, or that's, if you're going to kick, you've got to kick to regather. And it's funny, you know, someone like Jacob Stockdale, who's had an awful lot of success with the chip and chase, sometimes when it's in your armory and it's worked really well for you, it's your go-to. But three times he kicked the ball dead or turned the ball over, and you know, in a brilliantly attacking space where you either hold on to it or you execute a little bit better. And that's just a concession of possession over to the opposition, get them out of jail. I think it's about shot selection as well, of knowing when to pull the trigger on those moments and when to keep the ball in hand. He's one of the most devastating runners we have with ball in hand. He doesn't realise the punch that he packs. Hold on to the ball, recycle it. Let's use our two-on-ones, small things. And I think there is too much of a focus now as well going on, you know, turning the defence. That wasn't necessary against the Georgians. That may be necessary against England, but the line speed isn't so horrific against Georgia that you have to constantly turn them that way. We could have played with an awful lot more ball in hand, I thought.
There was a point Andy Farrell made when he took over the job, and he was asked, what's your vision for the team? You know, if you to pick something that you're really striving for, and he cited Croke Park and the English game, which, you know, is fair enough, but it seemed more about personality and attitude as opposed to outthinking an opponent or loads of detail. You know, he was talking about those quintessential values of Irish rugby. And at the time, I mean, look, you don't want to read too much into any of this stuff, but I kind of thought, okay, it seems like we've outgrown that a touch. And, you know, post-French game, he talked about how the team went into their shells, and it was clearly something they had messaged all week, because Robbie Henshaw the same night talked about how, you know, we talked this week about not going into our shells, and we did that. Again, it's vague. And he was asked yesterday what happened, and he said, we didn't have the courage of our convictions. And again, you know what he means, but like, it doesn't amount to a hill of a beans in terms of like rigorous analysis. I mean, if I'm a player and it's like going into my shell, or it's like courage of my convictions, I'm not seeing specifics there. And of course, behind the scenes, they're going into more detail, I'm sure, but we're not seeing improvements. You know, we're having pretty similar conversations week on week on week. We're not looking for everything to arrive fully formed in his first year in the job. It can't. But like, could you say, either of you, and I hate to throw two questions to two people on Zoom, but could you say any aspect of Ireland's play has improved since his first game in charge? Maybe that's a way of putting it.
Okay, firstly, Joe, if I can just jump in, I hope we never outgrow that idea of passion and elements.
But Keith, that's my point is that's the starting point. That's a given. Like you know what I mean? Like if we're going striving for what we're going for, that is a starting point, and that's everyone accepts that.
I'm saying that the times when we don't understand that we need to bring an emotional level to the game are often games where we struggle and have struggled in the past. So I'm saying that should always be the fundamental. It won't win you games. It doesn't win games. You need all the skills and all the other stuff with it. Mm. But because of the size of people that we are, if we don't bring that to the games, often we suffer. And we have consistently suffered when we kind of almost take certain things for granted. I think it's partly why we're not very good favourites. We only have been good favourites maybe for 1 year. But to answer your question as to whether we've seen an improvement in how we play, I would say we haven't seen an improvement in how we play. Right. And I would see that we are, the word I use is uncertainty, and we don't look very comfortable. That comes from the fact we're playing against a team that are ranked well below us, a team that we have habitually just put to the sword. And I don't think we were going to struggle to win the game, and I don't think we ever struggled to win the game, but I thought there was a huge amount of opportunities and space for us to show what we were capable of, and the lack of certainty or confidence or whatever it is meant we didn't show it.
I think defensively we've been good.
Okay.
We got ripped apart by a couple of some great tries against France, but I think, and you look at the amount of possession we had against England, and again, a brilliant individual try we succumbed to. But for the most part, I think it's been pretty decent. We conceded one try at the weekend. Didn't do a whole lot wrong. I think we just got caught ball watching. Tyke Byrne got caught ball watching, didn't see the runner coming short, getting a little bump on him, and that's the difference between him making that tackle and falling off on him. While we're talking about that, it's funny, you know, people are scathing of Jacob Stockdale and his decision to stay off. I actually think he probably made the right call. I think if he committed to the 13, who had a support player in his number nine, right on his shoulder, if he committed to him, it felt as though it was going to be a certain try. I think Jacob looked at where Billy Burns was and he felt, do you know what, there's a fighting chance that Billy Burns will actually get there and make some sort of tackle, so I'll hedge my bets and trying to close off the certain try. Now, the rules are always make them make the pass, but I think that situation, actually, the more you look at it and rewind, I think Stockdale got it right. Unfortunately, Billy Burns didn't get a finger on Kev Ladsey, mm-hmm. who had an outstanding game, it should be said, and it was a brilliant individual try, but I wouldn't be blaming Jacob in that instance personally.
Okay, interesting. And so defence has improved, anything else?
I don't think so, to be honest with you. I'm going through everything. You think about the things that have regressed, you know, the quality of passing, ruck has been good. Our kicking game has been erratic. I think it's been pretty average. There's been some really good stuff and then some very average stuff as well. So we've seen some potential players coming on. I know that that's not improving, you know, parts of the game. We've got some new guys breaking onto the scene. So I think I'm trying to grasp at some positives here. And I'm excited at the prospect of the likes of Shane Daly now. I think he's got a lot more tests in him. Haven't seen a 15-minute cameo from him.
Okay. Sorry, Keith, you were trying to get in there?
Yeah, no, I think we bloated a lot of players. That was the point. Okay. I was trying to say. And I think there might be a few more that we'd like to get in there. I wonder, Brian, I was going to ask you as a centre again, whether we should do with and could do with another playmaker in the centre. Because too consistently we seem to have been more aggressive and bosh up. I know we have more subtlety definitely when Ringrose is playing, but whether we should have a sort of 10-12 skills axis or not, or whether that would suit us or not.
Well, I'm excited at the prospect of seeing what Kieran Frawley is capable of doing with Leinster over the course of the rest of the year. You know, he looks probably a little bit lightweight still for international, and he's got to prove himself. But he looks as though he's got something. He's got you know, the potential that someone like Noel Reid showed in his early days but never properly fulfilled, I think Frawley definitely has that, and I think he has the potential to really kind of bring it on to the next level. He's the thinker of the game. It's always good, a guy, you know, playing that has played 10, playing at 12 as well. And the fact, you know, I just don't see, as much as I thought Farrell tried really hard and showed nice subtle hands for the Billy Burns try, I thought having two centres that seem a bit more one-dimensional than the likes of, you know, balance of Bundiaki and Gary Ringrose, or Henshaw and Gary Ringrose, it would be very exciting to see a Frawley and maybe a big centre, or even a Frawley and a Gary Ringrose in there, because at the moment I just feel as though we're easy to read. And, you know, players have been calling for Stuart McCluskey, and yes, he's played really well for Ulster for the last couple of seasons, but if people know you're coming hard at them and that's what your game is, Test match rugby is so different to European rugby and Pro 14. You just do not get to impose yourself the same way. And so you have to have multiple strings to your bow. And I think you get found out at the top level if you're not capable of mixing your game up and showing, you know, lots of different hands. So I think there is probably a need to dabble and look forward to seeing what the capacity of the team is and how they would grow if they did have a playmaker in the 12 jersey too.
So Keith, just to round off this chat and state the obvious to bring it to a close, a win this weekend against Scotland feels very important for Andy Farrell, just to calm everything down for the next 2 months. Otherwise, it'll be a long 2 months.
Yeah, I think it will, but I'd go back to one of Brian's earlier points. I think I'd like to see us perform.
As well, okay.
That performance goes to a win. I think if we win by etching out a win in this competition and we haven't shown that we have progressed or we've got a level of proper continuity in how we're trying to play, I think we wouldn't be overly happy with that either. Mm. But if we take this and knock this on its head and say, okay, at the end of this, we figured out some guys aren't good enough, some guys are worth a bit of an effort again, some guys are nearly over the hill but not quite there, can we get a bit more out of them for the next year? Who are the changes that are going to happen afterwards? I think we could all look back and be relatively happy. But that's an awful lot of big ifs.
Yeah, okay. And before we go, very quickly, just to mention, David Nuzzofora was speaking to the media today. So the headline news would be around contract negotiations, which, according to Nuzzofora, are not going to start this side of Christmas. We have estimated about 90 players out of contract in June, including some headline acts: Johnny Sexton, Tyke Furlong, Peter Omani, CJ Stander, Keith Earls, Keane Healy, Ian Henderson, all out of contract at the end of the year. Nuzzofora, I guess, understandably, was saying we need some financial clarity first before we negotiate 2 and 3 year contracts, Keith. And on the players abroad situation, there'll be no change in that policy, he said. Position we're in at the moment is the position we've been in all along. If players choose not to play the rugby in Ireland, it's unlikely. Unlikely is the word he uses. Unlikely we would select them. So that's the latest from the RFU. Nothing too surprising about that.
No, I would agree with that position, because I think it gives us a better chance of keeping our players back in Ireland and keeping the strength of the provinces, which we absolutely need. That's where an awful lot of the support comes through. I think it could be a very tough time for the contracting. I think it'll be very hard to look for similar type contracts when the amount of money that's in the game has fallen off a cliff. And I think there could be some really, really difficult conversations. I also think it might lead to a few guys leaving and going overseas. And if that happens, I think at this stage you have to kind of say, so be it. I think you want the provinces to keep as much of what they possibly can. The only thing I would ask for in this instance is that if some of our senior players decide to go over to France or England or whatever, that we make certain that we bring through academy players into the system and not get run-of-the-mill guys from overseas. And that is something that is unbelievably important. I'm really happy to get World Cup winning players coming in and playing, but I want to make certain that all the young guys get an opportunity, that they see a pathway to go and play for the province and to play for the country. And I hope that that happens.
Okay, fellas, we're right out of time. Thanks so much, Brian O'Driscoll, Keith Wood. Thanks a million.
Cheers.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.